Live from Scouts Pub in Franklin, it is Preds Insiders. Live here on this Wednesday evening, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover of TheGameNashville.com and the Nashville Predators Radio Network. The K stands for knowledge. Gover, how are we doing on this Wednesday evening?
Porth, I'm doing well, man. Just got back from California, did a couple things out there.
California, eh?
I'm still catching up on my sleep, to be honest.
Are you jet-lagged a little bit?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm all right. It's only 2 hours difference, and it helps when you wake up at 8 a.m. Pacific time. And, oh, what is this? Football is on in an hour.
I know, right?
That's the greatest thing in the world.
I would love to live that for, not forever, because I'm not a West Coast guy,
right,
at some point.
Obviously, having growing up out there, that's how I grew accustomed to my Saturdays. It's at 8 a.m. Well, I guess 9 a.m. 9 a.m. football was on, and then Sundays, 10 o'clock, NFL was on. But I actually got to watch the entire Chiefs and Titans game. It was actually carried out there, I guess because of the star power of Patrick Mahomes, I guess. But I got to watch every second of that game, and it was awesome.
Very cool.
Yep.
Very cool. So that wasn't the first game you've covered in San Jose, was it?
Covered, yes.
Really?
Which is why I wanted to do the Sharks Saturday night. Yes, which is why I wanted to do it. So for those who don't know, I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and my love for the game of hockey in general started at the Oakland Arena, of all places, and a neutral site game between the Minnesota North Stars and Pittsburgh Penguins back in 1989. And the Sharks came shortly thereafter. I was the first ever Sharks home game at the Cow Palace, both preseason and regular season. And then I went to countless games in the tank growing up as well, of course, when I became an adult and could afford to drive out there and all that stuff. But I hadn't been back there. I had not been to the tank in 14 years.
Wow.
And it was my first time being able to cover a game in the building that my love for the sport really grew. Not was born, but grew.
Now, is the Shark Tank one of the venues where you have to walk over the rink to get to the press box? Go over the catwalk.
Well, there is a seating portion. David Poile, for example, and his visitors, the Preds brass, right? Brandon Walker and the like, Vander Klok, they were all over the ice on the catwalk. That was their kind of section.
Mm-hmm.
But the press box, you don't have to walk to it. You don't have to walk over the ice to do it. But let me tell you, you need a Sherpa to get up there. It is high. I mean, holy criminy. For example, like a lot of people make fun of the banners, right? So regardless of your thoughts on banner raising, we all know where the banners are in the rafters at various rinks.
Mm-hmm.
Think about 40 feet above that, because that's roughly where we were. Yeah, it's high, dude.
Well, whenever they have, let's say, Willie Donick and Chris Mason and show them in the rafters, they are literally in the rafters. Like, you don't see the big scoreboard or the team, the 31 team flags in the background. All you see are, like, metal poles.
And that's exactly what it is. It was white metal everywhere. And of course, the first thing that came to my mind when I got up there was, wow, this is high. Second thing that came to mind was S.J. Sharkey got stuck up here one time before a game. And that's all I could think of for the first, like, 20 minutes. Pete Weber and I ended up, like, just kind of waxing poetic about it.
I'm sure Pete Weber could go through that entire story.
Of course.
I think he knows every story in sports there is to know.
Speaking of which, Porth, you should have been there. Complete tangent, but you got to hear this. So after Preds morning skate, Laviolette's had his availability, but the players have not yet. And Dan Rusinowski, the radio play-by-play of the Sharks, comes down, and those two guys find themselves in a corner, and they're just you're walking through, and Dan and Ms. Rusinowski says, "Pete, did you know about this? Well, I don't know, whatever, something in Guelph or whatever." And he goes, "No." And of course, then, first of all, your first reaction is, "How do you not know a hockey story?" Because he's so full of them. Then the second one, he goes, "Oh, we got to hear this." And then he goes on this big 5-minute story, and then Pete then trades a story, and then it was something to behold.
Mm-hmm.
Two legends of the broadcasting field who know everything there is to know about their sport and other sports, just going at it, telling stories. It was really cool.
So the Preds lost that game 2-1 in a shootout
unfortunately,
in San Jose.
Very close one.
3 nights later, last night, the Nashville Predators wrapped up their road trip in Vancouver, losing 5-3. And they were tied 1-1 after two, and they were tied 2-2 early in the third. And then Vancouver scored their third power play goal of the evening, Adam Gaudette, at 10:59, and then less than a minute later, Elias Pettersson scoring his second goal of the evening on a little bit of a broken play. And 4-2 Canucks, Philip Forsberg scores on the power play to make it 4-3. Tanner Pearson adds the empty netter, so the Canucks win 5-3. The Preds go 1-2-1 on the road trip. That road trip, outside of the second period in Detroit, I think left a lot to be desired if I'm head coach Peter Laviolette and the Nashville Predators.
So, I get that, right? There's definitely some things they can work on, no question. But it's hard for me. When the game is when the games are that close, and goaltending is really the difference, okay? So, in San Jose, for example, we saw what Juuse Saros and Martin Jones goaltending clinic. I mean, they looked great at different times of the game.
They did.
And in the
shootout.
And the shootout.
Overtime.
Again, you went to seven rounds, round seven, without allowing a goal. Not just it was tied in the shootout and you had to keep going. Neither goaltender had allowed a goal in the shootout. So it was very impressive to watch. And I have a real hard time with a team that is so offensively talented, like the Nashville Predators, to say, oh, they struggled. You know, like against San Jose, they should have won that game for sure. They definitely had their chances. But at the end of the day, you had a goaltender standing on his head. Your goaltender gave you a chance to win. It's not. I don't have much of a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like there was like a whole lot of penalty. Now, last night's game, right, with all the penalty trouble that they got into, they capitalized right away. I mean, I think it was three power play goals. Is that right? Three for three on the power. Yeah, so 3-3 on the power play. You can't win games like that. Your penalty kill has to pitch in, right? That's not all Pecorine's fault.
I'm going to get to this in a little bit when we assess the play of Pecorine and Juuse Saros, but Pecorine needs help.
Yes,
there are way too many high danger saves that he's having to make. And last night, I thought he played okay. He gave up four goals. I would probably say one or two of them he would want back.
That's fair.
But what are you going to do when you have to stand in there for that many high danger saves? He is already atop the National Hockey League in high danger chances against.
Right.
Like,
you shouldn't be giving him any more.
He should not be in that position to have to make those saves. It's good that he's making them a lot of times, but he shouldn't have to be in that position. And I think that's up to the Predators' defense for locking things down in front of them. And I think that the troublesome part through 18 games for me, maybe not troublesome, but maybe just concerning, is that I said this with Floyd Reese just a few minutes ago, is that some games the offense is clicking and the defense is not. Some games the defense is clicking and the offense is not. There's not enough games where they are playing really well offensively and really well defensively for a full 60 minutes. And I know that can be kind of a hard task sometimes in this league, but there has to be more consistency within this team.
For a full 60 minutes is a great way to say that, because I think the Detroit game, they played really, really well, right? Obviously, score regardless. But another game that they started off like gangbusters was that game against Calgary on Halloween night.
Mm-hmm.
That was, what, the first 20? Would Calgary have one shot in the first 13 minutes of the game?
It was nuts. And that was the carryover from the Chicago game in which they outshot them a million to nothing.
Right, dominated from front to back of the game.
Exactly.
And that's probably the only time all season, the Chicago game.
And then they dominated for those probably the first 20 minutes. I mean, they were up 4-1 going into the third period of that game.
The first period of the whole period.
They end up 5-5 at the end of the third.
Right.
Matthew Tkachuk scores the goal of the year.
Right.
And really, since that loss, they've lost 5 of 6 games.
Yeah, it's definitely not good. But the Detroit game, again, they played really well. But it's almost like this is pure speculation on my part. But when you have victories like the Chicago victory, and then you come back against Calgary, and you're kind of like, oh, they let that one get away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back against Detroit eventually, and they just steamroll them. You think, okay, this team, you know, you want to throw it in the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the Colorado game even. They got down, they came battle all the way back, and then before the wheels came off, you're thinking, you know, I have no problem assuming, that's what I'm doing here, assuming, that this team might get a little ahead of itself.
Mm-hmm.
They might get a little overconfident with their ability, because, let's face it, they're scoring goals at will, it seems like, this season. They're playing really, really well. They got a Vezina Trophy winning goaltender behind them. They got the future in Juuse Saros, who's putting up great numbers now, all of a sudden, after his kind of toast of mediocrity early on, and again, those aren't all all those goals were not his fault. But my point, though, is that they've got the things in place. They know what they have, which is a great team that can do dangerous, dangerous things. The issue is, well, you said, putting 60 minutes together in a consistent basis to being able to flex that kind of muscle and earn those wins. They're not good enough. No team in the NHL is good enough to go out there with potential only and like, oh, well, this is what we can do, and then kind of coast to a victory. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can get away with that every once in a while, but you certainly can't do it every other night. And you mentioned their record in the past six games or so. It's just not, they just need to put the hard hat on. What's the old cliche? Hard hat and hard pail or lunchbox or whatever. Just get back to work.
The lunch pail.
That was a horrible analogy. The point, you know what I was going with that. The point is that if they get back to work and they get that work ethic back, then they don't get overconfident with themselves. The sky truly is the limit for this team.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much talent on every area of the ice to go through a run like this.
Coming up next, is this just a bump in the road, or are these Preds inconsistent again to start this season? We'll get into that next. He's Jeremy K. Gover sporting his Mighty Drunks jersey. I'm Ryan Porth. We are live from Scouts Pub in Franklin in the West Haven neighborhood before Smashville Live, where Scott Hamilton and Cody Hodgson will be joining Darren McFarland coming up at 7 o'clock. All that coming up next right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Scouts Pub in Franklin in the West Haven neighborhood. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover of TheGameNashville.com and the Nashville Predators Radio Network, talking all things Preds on this Wednesday evening. Smashville Live coming up at 7 o'clock. Scott Hamilton and Cody Hodgson will be joining Darren McFarland here at Scouts Pub. And this place, there's a lot of TVs. There's a lot of good food. So come on out, have a good time for Smashville Live this evening. Scott Hamilton will have his gold medal with him.
Oh, really?
Dead serious.
Okay, well, guess who's sticking around for that show?
One.
Me!
1,000%. You and your Mighty Drunks
That's right.
jersey.
That's right.
Have you ever taken a photo in your Mighty Drunks jersey with a gold medal?
With a gold medal?
Yeah.
No, I can't say that I have.
You could tonight. So last night, the Nashville Predators losing 5-3.
What would that scenario even be?
What do you mean?
They're like me in my number one,
uh-huh.
in my jersey, number two,
uh-huh.
and there's a gold medal just laying around, number three.
Well, don't you win a gold medal if you win your championship in...
And the U.S. Pond Hockey Championships? It's a golden shovel.
It's a golden shovel?
It is a massive golden shovel. You know, like you have to scrape ice, that's the
How
idea.
Big is this thing?
It's pretty big.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's been as big as a table.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
I'll show you a picture offline.
Okay.
How about that?
Now, if you win your championship in the league, whatever league it is that you're in with the Mighty Drunks.
At Fort Ice, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stanley Keg.
Stanley Keg.
Which is also as big as a table when you're carting it down Broadway, which we've done.
Well, yeah, I mean, you never know when a gold medal is around.
All right, that's fair.
And you've got your Mighty Drunks jersey on. So I just wanted to confirm that
fair.
Tonight might be the first time that you take.
If he's got his gold medal, it will be the first time, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. So last night, the Nashville Predators dropped their road trip finale to the Vancouver Canucks 5-3. And last segment, we're talking about inconsistency. Do you feel like, Gover, that this is the inconsistency kind of bleeding over from last regular season, where there were games where we felt great about this team, there were games where we felt not so great about this team? Do you feel like it's just a carryover, even though they had the change, or just a bump in the road in this season in the sense that they have lost five of their last six?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think I'm going to skirt.
That's why I'm asking.
I'm going to skirt it. Oh, you are the keeper of all great questions. I'm going to skirt it just a little bit by saying that I think this is life and the sport evening itself out, because this team came out like gangbusters. I don't know if it was just the Matt Duchene thing or everybody had that sour taste of losing to Dallas in the first round in their mouth. I don't know what it was, but they came out like crazy gangbusters and put up points. So there was a time, and I'm not talking like two or three games in. I'm talking like 10 games into the season. There was a time where they had like four or five or six point-per-game players on this roster. I mean, they came out guns a-blazing. Rene was undefeated in regulation through like November 3rd or something. I'm not looking at it exactly, but it was into November. They were firing on all cylinders. Now, to your point, were they putting 60-minute efforts together? Like full 60? Occasionally, but not the entire time. So there's that. But this team was scoring at will. Okay? Roman Josi, we all know that defensemen don't usually lead their team in scoring. Roman Josi is not only doing that, he is a point-per-game player. Ryan Ellis, oh, by the way, is also a defenseman who is also second on this team in scoring. And he's almost a point-per-game player, even now, right? So to me, I just think this is the season rebalancing itself, recalibrating, because the Predators came out like gangbusters, and they've kind of settled back down to earth now, I think, a little bit. This is more of who, not this how they're playing right now, but I think their record, right, is more who they are in the long term.
A little bit of regression was bound to happen.
Yeah, right.
They were 8-3-1 after that Chicago win on October 29th. They were about to be 9-3-1.
Right.
In that Calgary game.
They should have been 9-3-1.
And for those four games, when you start with the stretch of Anaheim, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, Chicago, and the first two periods of Calgary, that team looked almost unstoppable.
Yes.
And it's almost like ever since then, outside of that one period against Detroit, that second period where they scored 5 goals, they have not looked the same for whatever reason. So I don't know if that was a loss that has lingered. I have no idea. But kind of going back to the point where they haven't quite gotten the offense and the defense at a high level at the same time on a consistent basis, when you don't have that and you are going through a little bit of a change and trying to figure out how to push the pace offensively but still be okay defensively, I think you are bound for inconsistency. And that's what we're seeing. Now, whether or not it's a bump in the road, I think we're going to know probably here in the next month or two whether this stretch that we're talking about, this six-game stretch, whether or not it is a bump in the road or not. Because they could easily rebound with Chicago, Winnipeg, Vancouver. I mean, they've got 5 of their next 6 at home. They have lost 5 of their last 6, but they have 5 of their next 6 at home. They could easily, let's say, of these next 6 games, win 4 of them, or go 3-1-2, or something like that. They could easily win 4 of these next 6 games, is what I'm getting at. And then all of a sudden, we're feeling great about this team going into Thanksgiving. You know? And I think it's just one of those things where we talk about this all the time with NFL teams, where everyone is 8-8. And give or take some bounces, give or take some breaks, that's when you maybe go up to 9-7 or 10-6,
yes,
or you go down to 7-9 or 6-10. And the vast majority of the league is within that spot, right?
Yeah, you're making my point for me.
In the NFL.
Yep.
And then you have the teams that suck,
mm-hmm,
and then you have the teams that are awesome.
Right.
And I don't know if the Preds are quite to the teams that are awesome level yet. They just have to be more consistent to be there. But the fact is, my point is, you can probably have a stretch like this of these last 6 games for 28, 29 teams in the NHL this year. Only the elite of the elite are going to go through a stretch of the season where they don't lose 5 of 6 or have a stretch of play where they didn't look as good as they did when they were at their best.
But would you not agree that, let's say they win that New York game, that New York matinee game, or they do win, they beat San Jose in the shootout
in a skills competition,
right? But I'm saying, would you not agree that if they win one or both of those games, your outlook you just laid out is completely changed?
It's,
I mean, because we're talking,
it's different. I don't know if it's completely changed,
okay,
but it's,
I'm not gonna sit here and be like a homer and be like, oh, this is an elite team in the National. I think they can be.
Mm-hmm.
But my point, though, is you're saying, are they? We don't know if they're awesome or if they're kind of. You have to admit they're borderline an awesome team. The way they started
borderline.
The season, if you look at their roster makeup, you look at the points they're putting up, right? And if you look at, okay, Rene's not going to stay at this level, the level he's currently playing at. He's not going to stay at the level he's playing at in October either. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to continue to be at this level either for too long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to more even out. This is a borderline awesome team to your, if you're using your analogy.
You have to
agree with that.
They can be an awesome team.
Okay.
Which is basically what you're saying. I'm just saying it differently.
I'm saying it's waiting to happen is what I'm saying. To me, this is first of all, it's way too early in the season. Second of all, teams have definitely not made the playoffs because of early struggles, but then, you know, then there's the old cliche, now cliche, of St. Louis Blues were dead last January 3rd, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for any of this to really...
We have 75%
right,
of the season
for
left.
Any of this to really matter, right, we have a long time to go. Just get in and then do some damage there. You don't have to worry about anything else. But for sake of argument, this team has struggled. 5 of the last 6, you said that. But they're, most of them, except for the Colorado game, have been close games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, the Vancouver game last night was an empty net goal.
I thought they were going to tie it.
Right, and it was an empty net goal. So it looks different on paper when you see the final score. You're like, oh, they'd be by 2. Well, okay, not really. It was more of a fling down the ice that happened to go in, right? So to me, this team is a lot closer to awesome, using your analogy, than it is to being a mediocre team. There's mm-hmm. Mediocre is not in this team's vocabulary, which I think is why fans are so frustrated with the last 6 games, sans the domination game, of course, in Detroit, because it should be better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they showed a lot in October, and they're not doing that right now, but this team is better than what they're showing
well,
right now.
Expectations are certainly higher around this franchise ever since the Stanley Cup run.
And they should be.
Back in 2017. But we also live in a world where patience is not always a virtue. And
it's also an underrated trait.
It is. But here's what I'm saying is that we're only 18 games in.
Right.
And there was a pretty seismic shift in the out goes Subban, in comes Duchesne, in terms of what they gave up defensively and what they were gaining offensively, mm-hmm. and now they're trying to figure it out. It's going to take more than 5-10 games to figure that out.
Okay, and let's also not forget, Dante Fabbro is a rookie playing, all things being equal, playing top 4 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
And he looked like a rookie last night.
And he has at times this season, but he's also looked stellar
mm-hmm.
for his age group, we'll call it that, right? For his status, rookie status. He's also had games and moments where he's like, you're like, this kid's ready.
Right.
But then he's also had to, which he's going to have. We spent a whole segment this summer, Porth, on this very show, talking about how whoever's paired with him, I was saying Matthias Ekholm at the time, is going to have to be a safety net for Dante Fabbro because he's going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this kid, in case you're wondering, has played a grand total of 22 regular season games and then 6 playoff games for a grand total of 28 NHL games in his life. And he looks like he belongs for the most part. He's going to make mistakes. So I think we forget that the third pairing needs some work, which we've talked about at length.
We don't forget that.
No. I'm just saying that.
Right.
And then also, oh, by the way, there's this 22-year-old kid fresh out of college last March,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's logging top 4 minutes for this team. It's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. It's going to.
I had Chase McCabe on last... Were we at Brewhouse South last Wednesday? Yeah, we were at Brewhouse South last Wednesday. We were discussing last Wednesday after the fact that Josi and Watson signed, you know, what was next for David Poile.
Right.
And I basically said, I think he's going to let this thing marinate for a while.
Yes.
But I think the conclusion after the marination of this roster is they're going to need to trade for a third pair defenseman before the trade deadline.
Yes, I've been saying it since last trade deadline.
Or Adam Vinken even brought this up earlier today with Darren and Chase on the Midday Show, is they may need to get a defenseman to put on the second pair and bump Fabbro down to the third pair to put with Dan Hamhuis. Those two were pretty good together
mm-hmm.
last year in that cup of coffee for Dante Fabbro. Whatever the case may be, they're pretty thin after Dante Fabbro defensively. And that is an area, if I'm David Poile, that I am assessing quite extensively throughout the dog days of this season before the trade deadline gets here, to try to find the right person that can add beef on that blue line that can help counter the additional offense that you have on this roster and the pace that you want to push offensively and be more reliant defensively on maybe a veteran defenseman to add into that mix rather than relying on Dante Fabbro logging top 4 minutes and having a pair like Hamhuis and Irwin.
So I know we have to go to break.
Or Weber.
Quickly, let me just say that the Preds have a little over $3 million in cap space, projected cap space, according to Cap Friendly. Now, that's assuming no other moves at the deadline, like what you're saying, right? Like if they go out and get a third pairing defenseman, they address that need. That's assuming everybody else stays in place. If that's the case, Porth, who is out there that they can get that would fit under the cap that is a second pairing caliber defenseman that's not a liability? That's the question, because right now you can go get a serviceable third pairing guy, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, we can kind of Band-Aid this, but, you know, he's got some warts because he's the third pairing defenseman. So if you're looking for a second pairing caliber dude that can play either third or second pair, depending on where you want to put Dante Fabro, whether you want to protect him or throw him to the Wolves, whatever the case is, you've got to be able to afford that player, and that is going to be a tall task, I would think.
We'll get to that. We'll continue this conversation after the break. Plus, Mikal Granlund scored last night. How can they get him going? Plus, the playoff, Pekka Rinne and UC Saros. We have a lot to unpack coming up next on Preds Insiders. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth, live from Scouts Pub in Franklin on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show on this Wednesday evening, live from Scouts Pub in Franklin. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover of TheGameNashville.com and the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, downtown Nashville. Gover, during the break, we looked at some potential defensemen that would be rentals at the deadline this season if the Predators were to go that route to try to boost their blue line before the stretch run and the playoffs. And two names that popped out. One that I've been kind of whispering for a couple weeks now is Sami Vatanen. With the New Jersey Devils, you figure the Devils are going to be in sell mode at that time unless they get their high horse in gear. Sami Vatanen, an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, 8 points in 15 games for the Devils. And then Marco Scandella with the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres are better than the Devils this season, at least to start. But if they fall out of it and become sellers, Marco Scandella could be a defenseman as well to look at. Just a couple names that stand out on teams that are unlikely or could be in sell mode, or likely to be, or could be in sell mode come deadline day.
Yeah, the Vatanen one is a really great idea. I've not done the research on who's available. I mean, I'm looking at it now, but I'm not prepared to address it on the radio, but at least yet. But Sami Vatanen is a really interesting one. He's put up points before, but even more than that, he's been he's got a really, really great track record for being responsible enough at his own end. And I think that's what you need on the third pair. You need to not be – the third pair should not be a liability. That's the goal. The goal – if you can be a third-pairing defenseman and get steady, non-liability minutes to your team, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. And I think he would certainly fit that bill come February or March.
A lot of playoff experience, too,
yes,
with the Anaheim Ducks before he was traded
for sure
to New Jersey. But we have plenty of time to talk about the trade deadline before that comes around in February. Last night, Mikal Granlund in the Preds' loss in Vancouver scored his, was it,
third?
Third goal of the season. Third goal of the season for number 64.
Double-checking that.
Yep, third.
Yep, third, yep.
And it hopefully can get him going. Now, the top line last night with Granlund, Johansson, and Forsberg, I thought looked pretty good for a lot of the night. They generated a lot of the chances, and Granlund had gone 12 games without a point before last night, and he's kind of been bouncing around the lineup. He was with Forsberg, Duchesne on that line to start the season. Then he found his way onto the fourth line here in the last couple weeks, and now bumped up to the Johansson line alongside Forsberg. What do you kind of make of Granlund's start to the season, where the numbers aren't quite there? The eye test may be better than the numbers.
It definitely is, in my opinion.
But he's being moved around the lineup. What have you made of Granlund's start this
year? So there's a couple things to that. The first thing that I want to address is the moving around the lineup. If you are a coach, generally speaking, not Laviolette specifically, but just a coach in general, trying to get a player going or get him some momentum to find him some success. You try him at different places, right? The fourth line is not exactly your traditional, like, hey, go out there and score some goals. But what it is it's limited minutes for you to go out there and maybe not face the top defenseman on the other team, to maybe go out there and have something creative to say on the ice and make sure that you can kind of get your chances. Putting him on the top line, like we saw last night, obviously sets him up for success. He's got great players like Johansson and Arvidsson to play with, you know, and he does what he does. I still think the best fit for him is that original second line of Duchesne, Forsberg, and Granlund. I thought they looked really, really great together early, even though the points were not coming for him specifically. Mm-hmm. Duchesne and Forsberg were certainly lighting it up. But Granlund, for whatever reason, wasn't factoring in, but that's okay. He was creating space for the other guys, and they were creating space for him to have his chances as well. That's why I said the eye test, to me, he's certainly a much better player than his 5 points in 18 games so far. But I have some stats for you, Porter.
Oh, hit me.
Okay. We know that Mikael Granlund had a 69-point season in 2016-17. We also know that he followed that up with a 67-point season the next year. Do you know how many points he had through November 8th in 2017-18? He had 5. And he ended up with 67 points.
Okay.
Then the year before that, his 69-point year, mm-hmm. his nice year, 6 points through November 10th.
Look at you.
So all I'm saying is he might be a late bloomer.
A slow starter.
He might be. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All we know is that he's got more goals in his 18 games this season for the Predators than he did in his 16 games last season. And he seems to have natural chemistry with Forsberg and Duchesne, and you cannot tell me this guy is a waste of a roster spot when he's out there using his speed, drawing penalties, creating space for his line. I mean, he's doing all these positive things.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to see him, of course, impact the score sheet more? Yeah, duh. That's what they got him for. But guess what? He's doing the right things. You have to believe it will come at some point. And then when you put this evidence together for his 2 career years and notice that through basically this time of the year, give or take a few days, he had 5 and 6 points respectively. He's on track, if you will.
So last night's line of Forsberg, Johansson, and Granlund, according to naturalstattrick.com, chances for versus chances against were 18-9 in that line's favor. I mean, I thought they were buzzing.
They were.
Most of the night. If I'm Peter Laviolette, I'm keeping that trio together at least for the next few games to see if those three can become the ultimate top line of this team and become that line, that catalyst offensively. Because right now, for whatever reason, ever since Duchesne and Forsberg returned from injury, they haven't quite found consistency with the lines, or at least the consistency that they did have back in the first 6-7 games of the season before Forsberg got hurt.
Forsberg's injury no doubt derailed several things, right? Forsberg is now on a scoring streak, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time where he, you know, 2 or 3, 4 or 5 game cup of coffee where he couldn't get anything to fall, right? Even though he was doing magnificent things out there. So Forsberg's got that going for him now, but he had a lull. He's coming back from the injury. Granlund basically disappeared when Forsberg went away with an injury. And Duchesne was, again, a point-per-game player, and then that fell off a little bit. So Forsberg is what drives that line that I've been trying to – I'm positive vibes to Coach Laviolette, right? You know, put that line back together.
I wish the listening audience could see the positive vibes that you're trying to
– throwing it out into the ether, yeah. So that line, they look so good together. They perform so well together. They have the track record, right? And for me, it's not about necessarily Granlund producing, although I did predict on thegamenashville.com before the season that he'd be a 60-point player this year,
mm-hmm.
but which I still believe, despite the slow start. But I really do believe that Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund, that line was a line, and this is with Arvidsson, Forsberg, and Johansson in mind, that line of Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund for that 6, 7, 8 games, whatever it was, to begin the season, and then the preseason when they were together, looked like the best line in the history of this organization. They looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they weren't scoring. They were an impact on the ice. They were using speed. They were creating fatigue over time with the defense because they had to keep up with all three of those guys. And they all think the game the same. So you have Forsberg doing creative stuff over here. Duchesne knows exactly what he's going to do. He's doing creative stuff over here to create space, and Granlund's just trying to get open. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you've got this potent, potent offensive line with, oh, also, by the way, Johansson and Arvidsson, and then whoever it was at the time on the top line.
It's the only potent offensive line in the city.
Well, that's true. Well done.
Because there ain't one across the river. Coming
and
up
that's
next.
That comment is fresh off a win, by the way. So that it tells you all you need to know about that.
Yeah. Coming up next, we assess the goaltending play of this team through 18 games. Pecorine and UC Saros. Plus, what is the best Preds jersey ever? Chase and I debated it last week. I want to hear Gover's response to that question.
Can't wait.
Coming up next. This is Preds Insiders Live from Scouts Pub in Franklin. The host of Smashville Live coming up at 7 o'clock, where you can come by and register to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Chicago Blackhawks this Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena. Smashville Live hosted by Darren McFarland this evening. He will be joined by Scott Hamilton and his gold medal alongside Cody Hodgson, Predators alumni. So that should be a lot of fun coming up at the top of the hour. More Preds Insiders coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, live from Scouts Pub in Franklin in the West Haven neighborhood. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover here with you on this Wednesday evening. So, Gover, let's look at the two goaltenders for the Nashville Predators through 18 games. You want to do that?
Let's do it.
Let's look at Pecorine. Now, Pecorine started 8-0-2. He was the oldest goaltender in NHL history to have a point streak, individual point streak of 10 games or more to start the season at 8-0-2. He has lost his last two games in regulation, so he is 8-2-2 with a goals against average of 2.60 and a save percentage of 907. Gover, how would you assess the play of Pecorine through his 12 games?
I think it's it's a mixed bag, right? Because, he hadn't lost a game in regulation until November 7th. And the way that game actually shaped out, he almost didn't lose that one either. If the Preds had scored one more goal against Colorado, UC Saros would have taken the loss in that game, even though he came in relief. So he's played extremely well this year, but admittedly, he started off well, and he hasn't necessarily in the last 3 or 4 weeks, right? Now, again, he had the win against Detroit, and he only allowed one goal in that game. And he should have had another shutout at another time as well. The Anaheim game should have been a shutout also. But this is to start the season. Two goals allowed, 5 goals allowed, but he won.
Mm-hmm.
Two goals allowed, 1 goal allowed, shutout. And then, of course, the Calgary, whatever that game was. I don't even know how you even describe that game for those who were not there. After the first period, it was, I don't even know how to describe that. So, you know, again, he started off extremely well, one of the best goaltenders, if not the best goaltender in the league this season through October, certainly. And then the last few games, again, he allowed 6 goals in that Calgary game, had the 1-goal win against Detroit, but then he allowed 5 against Colorado and then 4 against Vancouver. Again, not all his fault, but, you know, here the numbers are what they are.
I would say Pecorine's two worst performances were when everything went to hell in a handbasket. Third period against Calgary and the first 27 minutes that he was between the pipes against Colorado. And didn't think he looked great in either of those instances, but the whole team was awful. Not trying to make excuses. I feel like I'm just calling it like I see it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I totally get that.
With those two outings, overall, I think he's been better than what the numbers would say, the peripheral numbers would say. The goals against and the save percentage. I think those the goals against is inflated and the save percentage isn't as high because of these last two starts.
But you dug up a great stat earlier about Rene leading the league in high-danger save percentage.
Now, I misspoke earlier.
No, I know, but right. Nobody knows that. Come on. Well, they've forgotten. Porth, you just run with it.
Some people...
Theater of the mind.
...do know that. If Adam Vingan is listening, he corrected me earlier in the show.
Fair.
When I said that.
That's fair. But then again, he is Adam Vingan, so...
Pecorine leads the league in high-danger save percentage.
Yes.
Not high-danger save or shots against.
Right.
So... Look, I said it earlier. I'll say it again. He's been making a lot of great saves. as proven in that high danger save percentage, but it shouldn't come to that for him. It should not come to that for him. The defense has to play better in front of him. Now, UC Saros, how would you assess how he has played in his outing so far this year? Now, 1-4-1, 3.48 goals against average, 890 save percentage. Those peripheral numbers look awful.
Right.
But when you look at his last three starts, the numbers are starting to look a lot better, starting to improve for UC Saros.
His last three starts, he's 1-1-1, and he's just playing so well right now. That San Jose game, they were only in the shootout because of him. He's 1-1-1. He stopped 87 of his last 92, 946 save percentage, and a 167 goals against. Those were his last three starts. So UC Saros playing really well now. And it's really weird. He actually had, would you agree with me on this? He seems to have a track record of a slow start as well, a slow start to the season.
For sure.
I think the only anomaly, I think, was the second or third game of the year. Remember when Rene got hurt in like the third period of the Calgary game or something, and he had to come in and he made that miraculous
save.
It was the last season. It's all a blur. I don't know if it was last season, the season before.
But in the President's Trophy season and now this season,
right,
there have been slow starts where some of the fan base is like, whoa, now, is he actually the future?
Right.
And then he plays his way into the season, and he ends up being fine.
Right. And I think in this particular case, the Colorado game notwithstanding, he came in for, you know, just try to 19 saves on 23 shots in that game, but that game was bonkers anyway. So you can take that one out. He's played really well his last three starts. So for me, UC Saros is what we all think he is. He is the future of the crease when Pecorino decides to hang it up, whenever that may be. Hopefully not for a couple of years. But either way, he just has to somehow get the help in front of him that he's been getting long term, that he's been getting in the last three starts. Because it's weird. It's almost like Rene had the help, and Saros was being left out to dry, and now they've flipped. Mm. Right?
Now, goes to the consistency.
Now it's like, okay, hey, guys, we need to buckle down in front of UC Saros. You know? And they go do that, and they play really well in front of him, and then he saves their bacon or whatever the case is. But then when Rene comes into the crease, it's almost like they think, hey, he's got it. And then he's the one left out to dry now. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird dynamic that goes right back to what you said earlier, which is, can this team please give a consistent 60-minute effort on all areas of the ice?
Preds Insiders live from Scouts Pub in Franklin. Smashville Live featuring Scott Hamilton, who just walked in to the building, and Cody Hodson. That is coming up at 7 o'clock, hosted by Darren McFarland. Stay tuned for that. Gover, you are wearing your Mighty Drunks jersey.
That I am.
And you are wearing it proudly.
I am.
And
it's my favorite one. That's why I'm wearing it proudly.
Last Wednesday, Chase and I had a debate of what is the best Preds jersey of all time. This debate sparked by the Winter Classic jersey, the epic Winter Classic jersey that was unveiled on November 2nd. So, Gover, what would you say is the best Preds jersey of all time?
The early 2010s alternate blue.
That was a very popular answer when I put that question out to Twitter.
Porth, you know me. I would love to not be cliche. I would love to not go with the trend. But that jersey still, it's so beautiful. Now, would it translate to this moment in time? I don't know. Right? I don't know. If they said all of a sudden miraculously, hey, every Saturday game we're going to wear that third jersey, it would be really weird. Mm-hmm. Like, it wouldn't look quite as clean. But at the time, it was so clean, so gorgeous, so blue. It was so awesome. The checkerboard was faded, so it had a nice little touch, but it wasn't like over the top ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it had the tie down for the first time. I loved that jersey. So I would put that at number one. But I will say that the Winter Classic jersey is a very, very close two, to the point where I had to really think about my answer on the drive over here.
Really?
I was like, it's third jersey, of course. And then I started thinking about it, and I started putting it all together, and it is. If you're scoring it 1 to 100, I would put the alternate third jersey at like 91 and the Winter Classic jersey at 90. It's really close.
For me, hands down, Winter Classic jersey.
Okay. I can't argue that.
And I said this last week, I'll say it again. I don't know if I've ever seen a jersey be so well received when it was unveiled. Because we know in sports,
by Preds and Nashville faithful.
I'm saying just a sports fan base in general, because we know whenever a team comes out with their new colors or their new jerseys,
right,
people don't like change, right?
Right.
They they find things wrong with it, and then after a while, they're like, okay, it grows on them. There is no growing process with this jersey. It is beautiful, and it is fantastic from the get-go. And I have a feeling it's going to look even better on the ice at the Winter Classic in Dallas.
This will be the first jersey that I buy in 10 years. I have not bought a jersey. I'm a jersey collector, right? So I have a couple of Alexander McGillney jerseys. I've got a Ryan Suter World Junior jersey. But this will be the first jersey that I go buy.
You didn't buy that Mighty Drunks jersey?
No, this is a sponsored by Rebirth, my friend.
Look at you.
Pond Hockey Championships. They hooked us up. This is beautiful. Is what this is. Black, orange. Anyway.
It's so ugly, it's beautiful.
So this will be the first jersey that I buy specifically for myself in 10 years. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I love the fact that they tied in the Dixie Flyers. They looked for a classic look in Nashville hockey, not just the Predators hockey. And they went to the Dixie Flyers, and they honored them with the script and the way it looks. It's beautiful, and it's gorgeous. And I don't understand the people that don't like it outside of the fan base. I only have to assume they don't understand the history of hockey in Nashville.
Probably.
That's how I have to assume it, because it's so beautiful.
Jeremy K. Gover of TheGameNashville.com and the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Gover, thank you for joining me here at Scouts Pub in Franklin.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for having me, Porth.
Anytime. For Jeremy K. Gover, I'm Ryan Porth. You've been listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, right here in the West Haven neighborhood of Franklin, it is Smashville Live, featuring Darren McFarland, Scott Hamilton, and Cody Hodgson. That's coming up next right here. Keep it locked on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Now, where's that gold medal?